Transportation meeting on the 22nd of April will come to order. In attendance is Representative Walker, Representative Herman, Representative Phillips, and myself, Representative Miller. Right now, we are short one for form, but we will go ahead and take testimony at this time since we have people on the teleconference system at a very early hour in the morning.
We go ahead and enter.
Where are these people looking?
No, my husband and...
What's wrong? Okay, yeah, I will.
Eight, 9 o'clock?
At this time, I'm going to turn the teleconference over to Representative Herman, as this is in her district and she has a very vital and concerned about House Bill 170. So at this time, I will turn it over to Representative Herman.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. The House Transportation Committee will be taking testimony this morning on House Bill 170, which I introduced to provide for construction of boat harbors at St. George and St. Paul. I'd like to thank you all for showing up this morning. For the committee's information, there are 600 people living on St. Paul and 160 people living in St. George. The Pribilof Islands are in the middle of the Bering Sea, one of the world's richest fishing grounds. Up until the end of this federal fiscal year, most of the people of the Pribilof had made their living working for the National Marine Fisheries Service. This federal agency sponsored the annual first eel harvest on St. Paul. The federal government is withdrawing its support as of October 1983, leaving the people of St. George and St. Paul with no economic base. A bill will be before Congress which will establish a trust fund to be used for economic development on the Pribilof. The governor has expressed a commitment to the Pribilof in his revised capital budget. Today we are holding these discussions to bring the issue of harbor development in the Pribilof to the attention of the legislature. It doesn't really matter whether the appropriation is made in House Bill 170 or in the capital budget, but it is important that the state recognize this as a priority. I would like to start by taking testimony from the Department of Transportation in Anchorage, who can give us an update on the engineering work done to date. Anchorage, could someone there please give us a report first on St. George project and then on St. Paul, then we'll take testimony from the island.
Murph O'Brien, are you online at this time, or would you like to go ahead and make your presentation for the committee?
This is Riley Snell. I'm the Director of Planning and Programs in Central Region. With me this morning, I have Dick Armstrong, our Director of Design and Construction for the Central Region, and also the consultant for the two projects that are under discussion. And Carson, representing Foreguard Corporation.
You are breaking up quite bad. Could you talk more directly towards the mic and a little bit louder?
Time, I will turn it over to Frank to make a presentation as to the technical aspects of the project. Carson? Yeah, I'm in with Paul for president.
We cannot hear you. You're breaking up very bad. Can you talk more directly towards the microphone and speak a little bit louder? I was hearing the earlier person speaking quite clearly.
Okay, is this better?
Oh, that is much better. Thank you so much. Please do state your name for the record.
The project is concerned. We've completed preliminary engineering for the project, and we have the design completed
and we have estimated the phase one cost at about $12 million. The toll project would involve approximately $25 million. This includes construction of a breakwater with an integral wharf structure and create a boat basin in phase one of roughly 8 acres and for phase two approximately 26 acres. At this point, we're awaiting additional funding to complete the technical investigation and also the detailed engineering. The St. George project is, we've completed the preliminary engineering and are currently in the detailed investigation three-dimensional model test. They're to be completed within 2 weeks, and the detailed engineering commenced immediately afterwards. There have been some slight changes as can be expected from the model test. We've realigned some of the structures and the cost has varied a little bit, but not appreciably. And presently, that's breakwater only, and some dredging, which is estimated to cost roughly $14 to $15 million. And also to point out, that does not include a dock structure, which would be financed privately.
Does that conclude your testimony then?
Break in at this point, Adelaide.
Yeah, just a minute, Flory. I'd like to let the audience know that we have with us here in the audience that Commissioner Dick Lyon and Terry Elder from the Department of Commerce and Clark Greening, lobbyists for St. Paul, and Ashley Reed, lobbyists for St. George.
Thank you very much, Adelheid. I'm going to ask Ashley Reed to present the St. George views on this thing. He has it written there, so I think there may be some discrepancy as to the figures that Murph O'Brien just quoted. That's why I said if there was chance for a comment, okay?
Okay, could you hold on 1 minute then, Flory? Are there any questions of DOT and Anchorage from the committee? Okay, could you please stay on?
Talking about, is this committee at the Juneau office?
Yeah, Flory, could you hold on and when we call you for testimony, then we'll let you know. DOT and Anchorage, could you stay online too if there are any questions when everybody's through, okay?
Yes, ma'am, we'll be here.
Okay, did you have questions of DOT and Anchorage? So he wants you to testify here.
Okay. I think he has to testify. He wanted me to clear up the Department of Transportation.
You don't have anything?
He hasn't.
Yeah, Flory, then will you go ahead and comment to DOT in Anchorage if you have something to clear up, okay?
Just preliminarily, because Ashley Reed will give our viewpoints there, which we have given to the Senate side previously. The question is in regards to the price tag that Murph O'Brien is using, $14 to $15 million. The original price tag that was used was $12.7 million, which was sort of a halfway between anywhere from $8 million to $16 million for the construction of a harbor at St. George. And I think the prices have gone up because of the increase of more engineering work that was needed for the breakwater. And I understand there's somebody in Denmark looking at breakwaters over there, and the quality of the armor rock at St. George. And there is a report out, and I'm sure Mervis O'Brien is aware of it, that there was at one time said that the armor rock at St. George was excellent. And then there came a report that it was poor. And the third report by the same people came out and said it wasn't so poor after all, it's good armor rock. And so I'm still wondering why the $14 to $15 million as opposed to $12.7 million does it cost that much to do further studies out of the money that were appropriated for the construction, Merv? Over.
Representative Herman, I'm going to ask Frank Carson, our consultant, on the project to respond to that question. Mr. Carson?
Yes, Lori, that's correct as far as the rock. The problem originally, the very favorable rock was found in a subsurface site. And subsequent drilling revealed that that would not be of adequate size for the armor layer, the outermost and the largest size stone. However, the boulder field was found, and when tests were done on that, the initial tests were not favorable as far as specific gravity. However, when they completed more extensive studies, we found that quality was somewhere in between the first and second test. So in fact, it is acceptable. There is some question about the size and some of the other parameters, whether there's going to be enough as far as that's concerned. Just to get from a feasibility standpoint, our partners, Radovich and Nottingham, also re-estimated the price based on having to bring some of the rock from St. Paul when that quarry is developed. And that brought about one increase. And also, as you said, they're doing this three-dimensional model test in Denmark right now, and we've had telex exchange during the earlier part of the week, and because of slight changes in the layout and locating structures in deeper water, that added an additional amount of money.
Yeah, Mr. Carson, fine. One more question. How much of the St. George's monies for construction of the harbor have been now used for engineering purposes? A total, please.
Yeah, Flory, I believe that we'll take testimony and then the committee can ask the questions of DOT, but we'll just take testimony from you guys to the committee. We want to show the importance of the harbors out there to the committee here, okay?
Understood, and when St. George's testimony comes, I would like Ashley Reed to present it to you, okay?
Roger on that. Is there anybody in St. Paul then?
Good morning, Representative Herman. This is Harry. I don't have anyone here at this time, but I am recording the teleconference.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll have Ashley read you the testimony from St. George, okay?
Okay. By the way, the mayor of St. George is here too, Max Malavansky.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is Ashley Reed. I represent the St. George Tannic Corporation. I'll be real brief this morning. The legislature in two previous sessions has given an appropriation for a boat harbor at St. George. They've used those funds for the design portions and for the various studies that needed to be done on the rock and what have you. Since that time, the St. George Tannic Corporation and the St. George Village Council have worked very closely with one another in developing a fishery so that when the day came, they would finally get additional funding from the legislature to complete their boat harbor, that they would be able to actually efficiently and effectively use that boat harbor. Over the past 2 years, the St. George Tannic Corporation and Village Council has entered into joint venture agreements with various Japanese and Taiwanese fishing concerns. They've invested a tremendous amount of their corporate resources in developing their fisheries, everything from, you know, sending some of the islanders for training on small boat engine repairs to purchase the boats. Recently, they picked up an additional 15 skiffs that will be used this summer and two 32-foot orca boats. In addition to that, through their joint venture, they were able to obtain a 100-foot fishing vessel that should be delivered to the island this summer. The islanders have spent a tremendous amount of time developing their fishery and operating in good faith of previous appropriations. Now it's become more important than ever that St. George and St. Paul at boat harbors because of the federal government's withdrawal of the islands. It's a tremendous opportunity for the state, I believe, to build a harbor on both islands. Everybody who knows anything about fishing says it's right in the middle of some of the richest fishing resources in the world. The Japanese, who internationally has been known for their interest in fishing and for their expertise in fishing, have been working in this area for a long time, and I think it's an opportunity that Alaska's passing up. We have a real opportunity here for really a small amount of money to develop fisheries in the Bering Sea by opening a harbor at both St. George and St. Paul Islands. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ashley. Lori, do you have anything to add to that?
Representative Adelaide Herman, both Max and I, I'm sure, will say amen to what Ashley has said. And it is true that the corporation has spent the neighborhood of $1 million of its own money in the interest of starting fisheries here at St. George. And that's a lot of money to be spent out of a local fund, and we're not that rich. We don't quite have as much money as the state has or the federal government, and I want to say that we're getting as much help as is possible from the federal government, and Ashley can speak to that as well as I can. The state, as you know, Max is here, can speak to that if he likes, but as far as the state is concerned, our top priority for getting any kind of money from the state is toward the harbor, because that means jobs, that means fishing. And it is true that we're sitting in the middle of the richest bottom fish resources in the world, and any marine biologist will tell you that. The Japanese, who has fished this area for 50 years, know that, and that's why they're so interested and concerned. And they've already given some foreign aid, and I think it would be embarrassing if we did not get something substantial from the state when foreign countries are really pitching in and helping out. That's all I have to add to Ashley's testimony, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot, Flory. Then I'll ask the committee if there are any questions of you and Ashley, okay?
I can't resist this comment.
Representative Phillips.
You mentioned that the state's really rich, and I've been telling my constituents because of the drop in the oil prices that the party's over with, and we are not as wealthy as we were once before, and the legislature is considering repealing the permanent fund dividend checks and either putting it back in the permanent fund or using it for other purposes. And I just wonder, what is the opinion of people in Klivoloff on the repeal of permanent fund checks?
Representative Phillips, the permanent fund discrepancies or different beliefs on whether to distribute that or not has nothing to do with the harbor here, except this, that I still feel the state is rich with money. Just because we got a lot of money a couple of years ago doesn't mean we still are much better off than a lot of the states in the Union. As far as money availability is concerned, is how that money is distributed. And we're saying that this Pribilof Islands need to be given top priority, because we're working on something that in the near future is going to be self-supporting and create more employment and market efficient into the world.
Well, this year's permanent fund dividend checks are probably going to run around $170 million, and if this is repealed, that money could be used for projects such as this.
Oh, I understand what you're saying about the permanent fund. The legislature, in their wisdom, passed that law, and I think if you wanted some comments on it, I could give those to you, but I think we're dealing with a harbor here, and I want to concentrate on the importance of the harbor at St. George rather than discuss the permanent fund, okay?
Yeah, thank you for your comments, Flory. Is there anybody in St. Paul yet?
Representative Herman, no one showed up yet.
Oh, Okay, then, while we're waiting for people to show up in St. Paul, I'd like Terry Elder, Deputy Commissioner of Harms, to give testimony.
Thank you very much, Representative Herman. My name is Terry Elder. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. And I'd like to give some general comments first before we speak specifically about House Bill 170. The Department of Commerce has taken the lead in looking at the Pribilof situation from an economic development standpoint. In that respect, we formed a task force that composed members of Department of Commerce, Office of Management and Budget, and Community and Regional Affairs, looking into the issue of whether or not it made sense to develop harbors in St. Paul and St. George, and in fact looking into the issue of whether or not it made sense to develop one harbor, two harbors, or no harbors. It was the conclusion after a considerable amount of study that in fact it makes sense to develop harbors in both St. Paul and St. George. We think that the fisheries development in that area would easily support harbors in both areas, that there would be a considerable amount of added benefits of having two harbors and not just one, and that in fact, as Florey's testimony indicated already, that these would be self-supporting fisheries in the future that would create a viable economic environment in those two communities, and that without this type of development, in fact, there's likely unlikely to be an economically viable community. So that we would, some further comments on the background. Of course, we all know that the federal government is pulling out of the Pribilof Islands. They want to pull out in October, and that's why this is. We're looking at this in terms of timing as fairly critical that something be done fairly quickly. The federal government has also indicated that they would be willing to provide a $20 million trust fund for the Pribilof Islands. Our reading on that situation right now is that if harbors are developed on St. Paul and St. George, the $20 million trust fund would be available to finance ancillary activities such as processing coal storage, that sort of thing, on the islands. If the harbors are not developed, then the $20 million would simply be transition funds from what the federal involvement is now to no federal involvement. We think that it makes most sense to develop an economically viable community in St. Paul and St. George, and to use those funds in a in a way which, in fact, would supplement the development of the harbors. We've been told by John Katz, our representative in Washington, D.C., that the position of the governor on harbor development in the Pribilofs has been very helpful in the negotiations with the federal government. As you may know, the capital improvements project from the governor lists harbor funds for St. Paul and St. George not in the dollar amount that's on House Bill 170, but due to obviously lower amounts of income available, we just couldn't find the funds to fully fund these requests. However, I think it's important to note that when, in fact, the we've had to make hard decisions on what's going to be in the budget and what isn't going to be in the budget, we, in fact, on the administration side, did support development in both St. Paul and St. George, so that the governor's bill includes $3.4 million for the St. George Boat Harbor and $7 million for Phase 1 of the St. Paul Boat Harbor. One other thing I'd like to add in my comments, the task force that I referred to that included representatives of Commerce, OMB, and CNRA worked very closely with Representative Herman and Senator Mulcahy, and I think we had a very good dialogue with them, very helpful. We also had very good dialogue with individuals from the two communities, and in fact we're very impressed with the amount of efforts that have already been put out by representatives of the communities themselves. They are not people who have sat back and have simply come asking for handouts. They in fact have already done a considerable amount of work and put their own money and efforts into developing the fisheries, and we have a lot of confidence in them that they can make it work. In addition, I would say that there's a federal amount, a fair amount of other monies available for development in the Pribilofs, and in fact the islanders have already shown an ability to attract foreign investment through joint ventures, etc. We think that that's an indication also of the degree of confidence that other people have shown in development in the Pribilofs. We would encourage, in fact, further joint venture participation in the development and the financing, and including private financing for development. And we're confident, in fact, that the resource is large enough that, in fact, private capital and joint venture capital will be flowing into the area if the harbors are started, and it's important that be done. Thank you.
Yeah, are there questions of Mr. Elder from the committee? Representative Mike Miller.
Yes. So in essence, what you're saying is the original request was for $20,400,000 in House Bill 170. And the administration is willing to fund $10,400,000. And that, are you saying that you believe that that private industry should come in and pick up the difference, or are you looking at maybe next year fund some more of it? Just exactly what are you looking at?
What we're saying is that we are willing to step forth with $10.4 million. We would encourage other sources of funds to be utilized in making up the balance of what will be required. And in fact, I think that once it gets started, that likely there will be private sources of financing. We would encourage that, private and joint venture.
What happens is, if there is no private funds forthcoming,
then I'm sure that would be as high on our agenda next year as it is this year.
Thank you for your statement.
Any other questions? Representative Locker.
I have a couple of questions for DOT. I'd like to know how many years it would take to build from beginning of construction to the end? Could we phase fund it? And is there a savings by building both at once instead of one at a time?
Representative Walker, I'm going to ask Frank Carson to respond to that inquiry.
First of all, we anticipate construction. The original schedule would be to complete design this summer. The contract would be awarded fall, and construction would be completed substantially within a year. As far as the savings, there would indeed be a tremendous savings if both contracts get awarded simultaneously. We're looking at figures on the order of $2 to $3 million just for mobilization. And of course, with the type of construction that's involved in the location, there's a substantial equipment requirement that be difficult for contractors to meet in any case, just because of the size of material they're handling and some of the other conditions.
Thank you.
Of course, this would be, the scheduling would be important if the contract were awarded simultaneously, so that you could move equipment from one project right onto the next, and of course, you would possibly increase the contract period. But it would be in terms of months, not years.
Months, not years.
As far as one other thing, as far as the phase funding is concerned, that might present a problem. I think DOT's policy usually is not to award construction contracts unless the money is already available.
Did you have another question? Okay, thank you. And I'd like to go on now then to see if there's anyone in St. Paul, okay?
Chairman Herman, I don't have anyone yet.
Okay, then I'd like to check in Anchorage to see if Larry McCoolia from St. Paul is there.
He's not a DOT representative, Herman.
Is there anybody else?
There are other people in St. George and others in Anchorage. I'm not sure if they want to speak or not. Would you like me to call her and find out?
Yeah, could you check out Anchorage's information officer, would you?
Okay, they're not online.
We have some comments, Chairman Adelheid.
Okay, could you hold on there, Florey? I think then I'll take comments from the lobbyists from St. Paul, and that's Clark Green, okay?
And we'll own these. City Glass is owning these docks when we built, right?
Do what?
Who will own them?
City.
Oh,
we can get into it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they'll maintain
it. This thing on it, press it.
Yeah.
I had to lean on it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good morning. My name is Clark Greening. I'm the lobbyist for the City of St. Paul and also the Village, Native Village Corporation centered on St. Paul called Tanagusik. Mr. McCooleyev may be trying to get aboard this teleconference at the Anchorage office. We might check. But in the meantime, I'd like to point out a few historical facts. The islands, of course, have been, they originally were unoccupied except for the seals, and the Russians brought the Aleuts there as really slaves of the harvest for sea otter, and later the first seal harvest was managed under international treaty. And for some time now, most of this century, the federal government has made a good profit off of harvesting the seals. Now that the price of the pelts has gone down and costs have gone up maintaining the outpost out there, they've decided they want to pull out. And it is, comes as no great surprise to the people of both islands, and they, as has been pointed out earlier, have been investing quite a bit of money and time into looking for alternatives. And after expenditure of a great deal of time and money, it has become pretty obvious that the only alternative economy that makes any sense in terms of maintaining any viable community on those islands is developing the fantastic fisheries that is centered around the islands. If you look in the map, just to your left, you'll see that the two islands, they're 47 miles apart and about the same latitude as Sitka. And centered around those two islands are a great variety of fish, not just the high value-added species that are being fished now, like crab, but all kinds of cod and pollock and other fish that can keep and maintain a fishery through the dips and changes in the world markets of these fish. So it is a fishery with a great deal of variety and depth. It is true that private investment will come to the islands when there is a base for landing. That base will also have a dramatic effect on the cost of living to both islands. Right now, everything has to be lighter, and that raises the cost anywhere from 30% to 50%. And it also makes any continued fur seal harvest that may be maintained as a condition of this money that will be coming to the islands to be held in trust to help bolster up the facilities that have been left in pretty sad state of repair because of the federal government's withdrawal. In fact, over the number of years, they have maintained only at a minimum level, and so they have, although not an announced withdrawal, have actually been withdrawing in terms of keeping the maintenance up. So a lot of this money that will be available will be used to strengthen the infrastructure of the island, the water, sewer, and electrical systems, as well as to promote economic development. But as a condition, the islands will be continuing to do some harvesting. St. George has not had a harvest for some time, but they do go to St. Paul to participate in that harvest. But for a private concern, one of the islands, either through a joint venture with both islands or some combination of those two islands, were to go to continue the fur seal harvest, they would be looking at a deficit situation. The harbor would, however, help increase the viability of any kind of fur seal harvest. But the real economic basis of the islands will be fisheries. And from St. Paul's point of view, the $7 million, although less than the complete projected cost of phase one at $12 million, which would have given a complete harbor with a inner harbor facility running along the back of the breakwater, still feel that the $7 million will be adequate to complete a breakwater and entice private investment for some other participant to put in the inner harbor facilities so that the fleet, which is now just off the shores of the islands, can come into the harbor, be serviced, and to make a connection, an economic connection to the state that's not been made to date. That fishery is fished mostly by floating processors, foreign boats, or large Seattle boats. A harbor on the islands will enable more Alaskan boats to participate and will enable the state of Alaska to derive revenue. And the revenue that will be derived from the development of these harbors will vastly exceed any investment the state makes at this point. So it's a wise investment, and we're not so naive to presume that the state is going to invest this much money just for a few people on the Pribilofs unless there's some real economic benefit. And both harbors present a real opportunity for the state to develop a fishery and diversify its economy that is so heavily oil dependent. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Representative Locker.
I have one question. Is the opportunity for the sale of revenue bonds considered in the overall financing of this passage?
I can only speak for St. Paul on this. We have explored that. I believe if we can put a breakwater in place, at least revenue bonding will be feasible. Without a breakwater, it's not economic. Frankly, I think we prefer to have the harbor built and use private financing to develop the fish processing facilities that are necessary, some of the other things that may be necessary to service the fishing fleets that will be using the harbor. But yes, revenue bonding is a possibility so long as we can get these minimum-based appropriations. It's not cheap to bring power and water to the cities, let alone the additional demand that they will bring will be needed when needed to be met when the fishing fleets are actually landing at the islands.
Clark, then being you're here, and I guess we always think in terms of these two harbors together, and I already missed who you were speaking for, but I know that you're actually speaking for
St. Paul.
St. Paul. So you're saying that with $7 million, you could at least get in a position where revenue bonds could be considered.
That's right.
Representative Phillips.
Clark, if and when this special appropriation passes, or if the legislature some way funds the boat harbors, I assume both the city and St. Paul and the village corporations will take over the maintenance and operation of the dock facilities, and how would they generate the money to maintain these facilities once the facilities have been in place?
Representative Adelheid, we're breaking up over here. We're not catching everything, okay?
I'll repeat the question. Floria, Representative Phillips asked how the harbors would be maintained, from what revenues, and how would they be administered. I think presently, Mr. Lukanoff can talk for himself on the plans for St. George. I think St. Paul would have an authority representing the entities on St. Paul to manage it, but that hasn't been concluded yet. But the revenues will be derived from raw fish tax and landing fees and other taxes that the city could impose. Right now, St. Paul is a second-class city, and it may upgrade, but they will be sharing the raw fish tax, and the authority, if it's when it's set up, can be charging certain landing fees, wharfage fees, and the revenues there to maintain it. And to operate it.
Representative Booth.
Yes, then you spoke of the state having an investment. If those taxes and everything else is going to the source of revenue, is going to come to the cities, or to St. George and St. Paul, then where does the state make their investment back?
Representative Booth, a part of the raw fish tax will be coming back to the state. Only a portion of that will be shared with the municipalities. Also, we may be in a position someday to have to reconsider the income tax, and hopefully we'll be involving more Alaskan fishermen, and fishermen will be paying income tax if that's the case. Also, there'll be corporate taxes. There'll be corporate connections through processors that won't otherwise be connected to Alaska that'll be paying taxes and value added to the product. So there's that direct revenue. In addition, there is also an increased viability and the sustainability of the economy out there, so that the state will not be picking up the tab that the federal government presently is picking up to maintain the communities. So the state will be looking at a less need for support to go to the communities on the two islands, and also looking at the revenue generated directly from the processing, the catching and processing of fish.
So in reality, you're saying that a tax on the people, income tax coming back in, is going to be part of this program then?
Not necessarily. The raw fish tax exists presently, and that in itself will return revenue to the state directly without any change in the laws. But I'm just pointing out that what the state is hoping to do is, I believe, is to diversify the economy, diversify the fisheries, and this is one way to do it.
One more question. Do you have any idea what percentage of the fish tax and all those taxes derived from this industry go to the state versus the municipalities?
3%. Yeah, the tax, I think, is 3%. I believe, and maybe Representative Locker can correct me on this, is it 50-50? Is it shared?
What's that, on the fish tax?
Yes.
I believe that it is. We don't have any fish, but I think.
Yeah,
you have some rainbow trout.
Are there additional questions of the committee for Clark? Representative Miller.
This isn't for Clark, however, it's for DOT and Anchorage. And I do have a question and a comment that was made earlier, and I would appreciate if it was cleared up for me. The comment was made that DOT would not let the contract unless there was full funding there. Now, are they speaking of full funding at the 20.4, or are they speaking of full funding at the 10.4?
This is Dick Armstrong of DOT. I think we're talking about, for instance, if the breakwater in harbor and inner harbor were estimated at $20 million, and just the breakwater were at $14 million, we could let a contract for $14 million, but we couldn't let a contract for half a breakwater, for instance, because it would wash out before we finished building it, if you know what I mean. We couldn't advertise and award a contract without having the money to at least pay for and encumber that contract.
Do you know if the administration proposal to fund at the 10.4 level includes what you need to get done so you can let the contract?
This 10.4, well, simply put, a contract which may not include all the structures, for instance, private financing for a dock, if that's not, that funding is not in line, it's time that the state portion of, say, $7 million on a project was ready, it may have to be let into contract. Savings we were talking about earlier can only be realized if you can guarantee a contractor that he'll have more than one project. This is Riley Sella, Director of Planning and Programming. The 10.4 estimate that's represented in the governor's budget, we feel will do two things for us. One, that it will induce private investment because of the state seed money. And secondly, that even if private investment is slow and coming, that the dollars will provide an inter-facility, usable facility for the breakwater itself, with no inner harbor facility.
This is Ashley Reed. For the benefit of the committee, and to give everybody a better understanding here in the House Transportation Committee today, both islands have very different harbors planned. One thing in St. George, there have been previous appropriations. It's my understanding, you know, some people may question, you know, why a $7 million appropriation for St. Paul and a $3.4 million appropriation for St. George. The reasoning behind that, or the logic of the administration, I think Terry Elder can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the administration's logic was that with the $3.6 million that currently exists at DOT and $3.4, it basically would give both islands the same amount of funding of $7 million. So what we're looking at, you know, should this committee approve the special appropriation of $20.4 million, or should they approve the $10.4 million appropriation, there's almost another $4 million at DOT. So in essence, what we're talking about really is maybe $14 million that will be available with this $10.4 million appropriation. To give everybody a better understanding of the different types of harbors, St. Paul has a much larger scale harbor plan than does St. George. I think that the St. Paul Harbor, for sake of explanation, is more along the size of the Nome Harbor project. And what both islands are interested in doing, St. George is interested in completing their harbor, which will have a total cost of $12 million, and St. Paul is interested in completing phase one of their harbor, which is a $12 million project. And both harbors, the phase one of St. Paul's harbor will be a workable harbor. It's not something where, you know, phase one really doesn't do anything. It will provide a means for a workable harbor for St. Paul, and then either through private investment or subsequent appropriations, that harbor will expand to become much larger.
Thank you for your testimony, Ashley. I'd like to go back to St. Paul and see if anyone has showed up there, okay?
Representative Herman, no one has showed up, and I don't think anyone will show up. But I just wanted to make a comment as the moderator here at St. Paul. We didn't receive any of the reception on Representative Locker's comment.
Yeah, okay. Then did Larry Mikuliev show up in Anchorage anywhere?
No, ma'am, he is not here.
Why don't you just hold him to tell him, hold on the line, but we won't take any questions.
Okay, we just hold off here. We'll go back to Mike Miller chairing this meeting, and DOT, can you stay online? I think Flory wants to make some additional comments.
Yes, ma'am. I would like to make one. We have been crunching some numbers here, and the existing administration numbers, the 7 million for St. Paul and the 3.4 million, the $7 million will buy an intermunicipal facility at St. Paul, but it's still questionable whether the 3.4 would provide sufficient funds to provide an interim facility at St. George.
But you've got $6 million also right now, right?
No, ma'am. I think we have 3.6 of the original appropriation left for construction at this point.
Okay. Is that construction available for the St. George Boat Harbor? And if it is, wouldn't that make it 7? And would 7 do the job?
No, ma'am.
Okay. How much more do we need?
Million, yeah.
How much more do you need, then?
I'll ask Frank Carson to respond to that.
The total
cost for the breakwater contract would be about $14 million.
For both of them?
No.
Question from St. George, please.
Okay, Flory, we'll take a short question from you, and then we're going to wind down here, okay?
Oh, wait.
It'll be short. The engineering costs seem to have gone beyond what we had anticipated for the St. George Harbor, as well put by Ashley Reed and Clark Greening beautifully. We were estimating a cost of a complete harbor, without the dock, of course, a harbor intact for $12.7 million as originally mentioned, and we've had up to $4.8 million appropriated by the state legislature. Now somebody's telling me we have $3.6 million. It appears that $1.2 million or some such amount of figure has been used already from the construction funds directed to St. George Harbor to date, and it seems awfully exorbitant. I don't know how much money and where the money's coming from St. Paul to do their design, but we'd like a little bit of an explanation as to the appropriateness of using that construction money for design, and if so, if there is any discrepancy, I think we should take seriously. If $7 million is not enough to complete a harbor, there are two arms of the breakwater. At least the major arm. firearm could be constructed with the $7 million that we're all talking about, although I believe we need a little more money than that if we can get it, Representative Adelheid Terman.
Yeah, Florrie, I think there's a lot of numbers coming off today that need some clearing up, and I'm going to ask the chairman if we can hold this bill. There's just some things that I'd like to get cleared up.
Thank you.
We only have roughly 5 minutes left. Is there any comment of the committee?
She just summed it up real well.
There's a lot of numbers which have come out, and I wasn't too confused before the start of the meeting. I'm very confused now. So we'll try to get these numbers cleared up with the department and the administration and find out just what numbers are the correct numbers. So at this time, I will close the transportation meeting of the 22nd of April. Thank you, and I'd like to thank everyone in Anchorage and on the Pribilof Islands for getting up so early in the morning to testify, and I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
At 6:30 now.
Yes, present here at St. George, we're chairman of the board of St. George Tonawanda Corporation also, Heliodor Filimonov, and the secretary treasurer of the corporation, Anna Filimonov. And I think with the chairman of the traditional village council here, Max Malvansky, I think you can see that a great deal of interest is brewing at St. George, especially this day, because we have a large representation. I think 19 oil companies are here at St. George looking at this very subject as well as other things. And I want to let you know that because with the successful bidding on the St. George Basin, there's a great deal of interest being extended by the oil companies on facilities at St. George and St. Paul prior to that had not existed prior to this date. So I think we can all be encouraged that private industry will be interested as well as the state and the federal government. But we are praying that the state will take the initiative in all these things and come up with the appropriate amount of money this year. If we don't, we have a halibut commission, international halibut commission, that has given these islands 3 years in which to make it a halibut fishery. If we don't do much this year, we're going to be shortcut by one lost year, okay?
Thank you. We'll take that into consideration. And at this time, we will sign off.
Did you ever do this? Those figures?
Yeah.
Anchorage cannot give you those figures. It's got to come from the commissioner's office.
Exactly. Here. Exactly.
And that's the problem. What you do is call Casey's office. Have Casey straighten it out with Riley Snell, and then he can come back and give you the figures.
There's too many.
I got one more item I want to do here. We have the letter of intent on House Bill 313. Appreciate it. Everyone want to just read it real quickly.
We did yesterday.
Okay, with a few that weren't here. So,
well,
is this what we as the committee wanted to say?
I have one problem with it, and I don't know whether or not. And I read it, and it's the next to last paragraph that says, "And further, it is further suggested qualifications of commissioners be reviewed to ensure more efficient operation, both for the benefit of carriers and public." I don't know whether or not the qualifications of the commissioners. I don't have any basis to really question whether or not their qualifications are or not. I mean, I didn't see anything in any of the testimony that was really challenging the qualifications of the commissioners.
Well, I know.
I mean,
in statutes,
what's the basis of that?
In statutes, there are the qualifications that each commissioner should have, and I think all we're saying is that want to look and make sure that these commissioners that we presently have do fall into these categories.
They have new ones that come on.
But we have no reason.
Well, we're not saying that there is, just to make sure that they are presently now.
Come on in the audit.
Where'd you get that paragraph?
That was Representative
Woodley,
right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you read that? When you read it out to us?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, does that seem right to you for some reason? I mean, I never heard any testimony from anybody that said that
there is nothing the matter with that, Mike. Well, but they have some qualifications if they're in statute. We're just
the qualifications are in statute.
Yeah.
So we're just asking them
and
to check to be sure these.
I don't look at this as a derogatory slap against any of the commissioners.
Well, that's the way I was reading it. Now maybe I'm not reading it.
Yeah, I didn't. When I read it, I didn't read it that way. I read it just to look to make sure that the commissioners do fulfill the statutory requirements, and any future commissioners that come would fall in there.
I would think, we talked earlier about the fact that the limited number of the commissioners, so I would think that it was further suggested the qualification of the commissioners that, and the number of the commissioners that sat on the board, or ATC, should be reviewed to ensure a more efficient operation, both in benefit of the carriers and public. And
you're correct, we did discuss
85?
That'd be correct.
You want to make that as a motion?
We'll make that as a motion to amend it to read that way.
Vote.
Did you get that, Steve?
Exactly.
If you would restate your motion.
Well, okay. That the qualification of the commissioners and the number of commissioners sitting on the ATC should be reviewed to ensure a more efficient operation.
I'll go for that.
Is there objection to the motion? No objection, so ordered. Is there objection to the letter as amended?
In the last paragraph, too, is the most important link. And therefore, the ATC, I would just think that something that ATC should be investigated, or should be not investigated, but should be thoroughly reviewed before it continued or something like that.
Well, it will be thoroughly reviewed, and it will be a discussion within this next year, as there is, as you know, a petition to eliminate the ATC floating around.
Right.
I imagine it will be.
Well, that's my only comment, but that's, other than that, it's fine.
Representative Walker.
Yes, it could say ATC should be continued after full review.
That sounds like a good amendment.
Yeah.
Would you like to?
Yeah.
Okay. Any objections? No objections.
I just wanted to make a few comments on it, and the stuff that's in that letter we took off the tape and working with representatives.
Right.
So
right. You've done a good job. Right. We're just
closed.
Yeah. We're just adding.
The other thing in discussion with Labor and Commerce Committee staff on the House and the Senate side, as well as the Senate Transportation Committee staff, there seems to be a tendency to look at simply continuing ATC for 2 years or 1 year or whatever at this time, so that they're not sunsetted, and then during this next interim have a joint House and Senate committee to look into their operations and safety things, the whole big picture, because it gets in your mind to do that in a regular session. And at that time, come back and make recommendations based on that work and on the legislative law.
Yeah.
I think
that's kind of
what we'll move this.
We
yeah. Okay, is there any objections to the letter of intent with the two amendments? Hearing none, letter of intent. Okay. This moved and transportation meeting is adjourned.